Well, today it's November 17th, 2023, the time 19:19 hours Eastern Standard Time. Hi, everyone, and welcome to our study, little children. Today we have the Born and Raised article, chapter 11, paragraph 11, and we have some very important scriptures today as well. As always, but chapter 17 of 1 Samuel is a particular chapter which has been subject to some controversy, so it will be somewhat of an important chapter. The time before the deluge was a time of higher technological advancement than we may dare to imagine from the Born and Raised article, which explains how Noah could build the ark and do it using metal alloys for rivets that go far beyond the technology recreated soon after the deluge. The reason for the disappearance of that technology is clearly more to do with the mining required to obtain and the refining plants required to process minerals. Noah and his sons found a way to process bronze, which is possible at a much lower temperature than for iron. The timber used to build the ark was wood grown before rain had fallen on earth, and before changes in seasonal temperatures made tree rings as we see today. The design of the ark included a quote-unquote moon pool to minimize the stresses caused by waves acting on center parts of the hull, which could raise the ship and break it in half without a place to accept the waves safely. Men of ancient times were not primitive, but possessed very advanced technology that was lost when most died. That reminds me also of all these technologies like Machu Picchu, all the constructions of ancient buildings that we see at certain locations around the world even, which are way beyond any technology that we have today. That could never have been constructed. The pyramids could never have been constructed by humans today with the technology we have, or at least for example, or if not the pyramids, the obelisks of Egypt, it just wouldn't be possible to erect them with today's technology. Yet the Egyptians, or someone, years ago did, and a good reason to believe it was the Egyptians, of course, in the case of the obelisks, certainly. Only Noah, during the deluge, the Bible tells us most people perished except for Noah and his family. Only Noah and his sons and their wives, eight faithful humans, survived the deluge to found the village of Eight. It's called the Village of Eight. Cow's milk is very harmful, mucus forming. And that's what I'm experiencing when I ingest, when I eat, milk, when I put milk on my cereal. But I'm putting a lot less on my cereal nowadays. But it's I found it very consistently does do this in my case, causes mucus, but it also, I believe, is responsible for the arthritis that I was experiencing. I really believe that because I've reversed the arthritis recently, but it's not just by stopping the dairy, because I didn't stop dairy, didn't stop the cow's milk entirely. I also used other supplements, and it's too many to mention. Actually, it's a combination of all these different things like omegas and vitamin K2 and all these different vitamin D, all these important supplements that are needed to reverse arthritis. And it's not going to work for everybody the same way, I'm sure. The Village of Eight was the name of the village founded by Noah and his family. At least that was one name for it. Nearby lie the anchor stones that were evidently from the ark, that are ditched, that were ditched, and still stand or lie there. Some of them upright, that were ditched before the landing. The ones that can be seen there, I think there's at least one very prominent anchor stone standing in a recent photo near this village. It was evidently one of the anchor stones from the ark. It was ditched before the landing of the ark near the nearby Twin Peaks of Mashu. So a lot of evidence. 14 anchor stones in the footnote. 14 anchor stones were found between Kazan and Nakhchivan. Nakhchivan is where a place up high on the mountain where the village apparently was the original village that was built immediately after the ark landed and remained there for a very long time. But that's what they called it in the modern people who discovered it. In the modern day, when they discovered this, it's still a very fragmentary village. I mean, it's the remnant of the village, right? The remains of the village of Nakhchivan. And there's a place called Kazan as well there, which is more, I believe, down on the same level, obviously, as it's closer to where the anchor stones are, on the lower level, away from the mountain of Mashu. Our proverb, that's the end of our study for the Born and Raised article for today, little ones, in Proverbs chapter 20. It's a very powerful proverb for our scripture of the day, little ones. Proverbs 20 and 5, counsel in the heart of a man is as deep waters, but the man of discernment is the one, or is one, that will draw it up. Counsel, getting counsel from people. It's not always easy to get the counsel from people, but the man of discernment is one that will draw it up. Okay. Counsel in the heart of a man is as deep waters. In other words, it's not always easy to draw up counsel from the heart of a man. Jeremiah chapter 21, the word that occurred to Jeremiah from Jehovah when King Zedekiah. No, we're not ready for Jeremiah. Hang on one second. We're doing Samuel, 1 Samuel 17. 1 Samuel 17, and the Philistines assembled their armies for war. Now, this is controversial after a certain place. This part is not controversial. They assembled at Socoh, which belongs to Judah, and they camped between Socoh and Azekah in Ephes-Damim. Saul and the men of Israel assembled and camped in the valley of Elah, and they drew up in battle formation to meet the Philistines. This is a long chapter, so we really have to get moving on it. The Philistines occupied the mountain on one side, and the Israelites occupied the mountain on the other side, with the valley between them. Then a champion came out from the camps of the Philistines. His name was Goliath from Gath, and his height was 6 cubits and a span. And what I'm going to do, I think we're going to skip the part that's controversial, and not just because we want to shorten it, but I don't think that's the reason. You can read that on your own if you're interested, but it's not necessary to the actual meaning of the scriptures. And it's controversial for a reason, that it's missing from one of the older, the Vatican version of the Septuagint. In fact, that manuscript does not have this part that we're going to skip out. Well, I'm not sure if we're going to skip out all of the controversial parts either, because there are parts, we will try to skip out the controversial parts, but there's more, even in part of chapter 18, that's controversial. Then a champion came out, and he was Goliath. We've all heard the story, probably, of David and Goliath. If not, this is going to be interesting for you. He had a helmet of copper on his head, Goliath, and he was wearing a coat of mail of overlapping scales. The weight of the copper coat of mail was 5,000 shekels. Sounds like quite a lot of a heavy thing. It's about 57 kilograms, or 125 pounds, just his coat of mail alone. He had shin guards of copper on his legs, and a javelin of copper slung between his shoulders. His height was 6 cubits and a span, which is like 11 feet or something, isn't it? Or 9 feet? Okay. I think depending on the size of the cubit that you use, could be as high as 11 feet, but it's 9 feet, 5.75 inches. In this computation, from the... Oh, I'm reading the study Bible. Isn't that something? Yeah, I didn't know that I was reading that. Okay, he had shin guards of copper. I was referring to it. Let's go back. 17, okay. We're going to go back. I'm going to go to the reference version now. Jehovah willing. Let's go to the reference Bible. And it still says 5,000 shekels of copper, of course. And he's still 6 cubits and a span. And there were greaves of copper above his feet and a javelin of copper between his shoulders. And the wooden shaft of his spear was like the beam of loom workers, and the blade of his spear was 600 shekels of iron. The blade of his spear alone is what is 125 pounds, it says. What? 600 shekels. Well, the blade of his spear. That's different. Just a minute. Let's check the other version. Yeah. Iron blade of his spear. The coat of mail was 5,000 shekels of copper. Well, a shekel of copper is different from a shekel of iron. I didn't know that. Okay. And the bearer of the large shield was marching ahead of him. So Goliath had his own shield bearer marching ahead of him with a large shield. Then he stood still and began to call to the battle lines of Israel and say to them, "Why do you come out to draw up in battle formation? Am I not the Philistine, and you servants belonging to Saul? Choose a man for yourselves, and let him come down to me. If he is able to fight with me, and he does strike me down, we must then become servants to you. But if I myself am a match for him, and I do strike him down, you must also become servants to us, and you must serve us." And the Philistine went on to say, "I myself do taunt the battle lines of Israel this day. Give me a man and let us fight together." When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, then they became terrified and were greatly afraid. And that's the last of the non-controversial portion. To get to the continuation point, we jump down to verse 32. And David proceeded to say to Saul, "Do not let the heart of any man collapse within him. Your servant himself will go and actually fight with this Philistine." But Saul said to David, "You are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a boy, and he is a man of war from his boyhood." And David went on to say to Saul, "Your servant became a shepherd of his father among the flock, and there came a lion and also a bear, and each carried off a sheep from the drove. And I went out after it and struck it down and made the rescue from its mouth. When it began rising against me, I grabbed hold of its beard and struck it down and put it to death. Both the lion and the beard your servant struck down, and this uncircumcised Philistine must become like one of them. For he has taunted the battle lines of the living God." Then David added, "Jehovah, who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he it is who will deliver me. He it is who will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." At this, Saul said to David, "Go, and may Jehovah himself prove to be with you." Saul now went clothing David with his garments, and he put a copper helmet upon his head, after which he clothed him with a coat of mail. Can you imagine how much arrogance it takes to write an article about modesty? I mean, it's inconceivable to me. Then David girded his sword on over his garments and undertook to go, but could not because he had not tried them out. Finally, David said to Saul, I am unable to go in these things, for I have not tried them out. So David removed them off him, and he proceeded to take his staff in his hand and to choose for himself the 5 smoothest stones from the Torrent Valley and to place them in his shepherd's bag that served him as a receptacle. And in his hand was his sling, and he began approaching the Philistine. You know, there's an actual fact that there's such a thing called a staff sling, where you can throw a stone using a staff and a sling together. It's a special type of sling. It's a particular kind of sling that by the use of which a stone may be thrown at a much higher velocity than merely by hand with a few strips of leather in your hand. But this staff, together with the sling, can be used in such a way, if it's a staff sling type of device, to propel a stone at a very high velocity to kill, or it's used in warfare because it's used to kill. And so David began approaching the Philistine in verse 40 and in verse 41, and the Philistine began to coming nearer and nearer to David, and the man carrying the large shield was ahead of him. Now when the Philistine looked and saw David, he began despising him, because he proved to be a boy and ruddy, of beautiful appearance. I like the way that is expressed in those words. You know, you despise somebody maybe if they're, you know, acting like they're going to be attacking you, and yet they look exceedingly young and they're also handsome or beautiful in appearance, cute. If a cute little baby says to you that they're going to kill you, it's going to have a different effect from if a very powerful man of war says he's going to kill you. It's a different effect, right? So Goliath was despising David. He was just looking, it's just almost overwhelming him because of the appearance of David. So the Philistine said to David, am I a dog? But you mean overwhelming him with some kind of, you know, disdain, or you know, it seemed absurd to him. So the Philistine said to David, I'm trying to think of the correct word, but I can't think of it right now. Am I a dog so that you're coming to me with staves? That's what Goliath said to David. With that, the Philistine called down evil upon David by his gods. And the Philistine went on to say to David, just come to me, and I will give your flesh to the fowls of the heavens and to the beasts of the field. Now, maybe it was a staff sling, and maybe it was not, but why did David have a staff? In one hand, people have said, what the comment has been is that, how could David, you can't have a sling, you can't operate a sling and a stone if you're carrying a staff in your other hand. You need 2 hands, one to put the stone in the sling. And so if he's got a staff, he must be using it as part of his sling, is the idea that someone has suggested there, which seems reasonable. But in turn, David said to the Philistine, you are coming to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin, but I am coming to you with the name of Jehovah of armies, the God of the battle lines of Israel, whom you have taunted. This day Jehovah will surrender you into my hand, and I shall certainly strike you down and remove your head off you. And I shall certainly give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines this day to the fowls of the heavens and to the wild beasts of the earth, and people of all the earth will know that there exists a God belonging to Israel. And all this congregation will know that neither with sword nor with spear does Jehovah save, because to Jehovah belongs the battle, and he must give you men into our hand. And it occurred that the Philistine rose and kept coming and drawing nearer to meet David, and David began hurrying and running toward the battle line to meet the Philistine. Then David thrust his hand into his bag and took a stone from there and slung it, so that he struck the Philistine in his forehead, and the stone sank into his forehead, and he went falling upon his face to the earth. So David, with a sling and stone, proved stronger than the Philistine and struck the Philistine down and put him to death. And there was no sword in David's hand. And then he cut his head off and so on. I think we're going to skip the rest of it. I think that's enough of the non-controversial part. But also we have, are we really to believe that David bragged that he was going to cut the man's head off before he even killed the man? I mean, is that what we are to believe? Should we believe that? I'm not sure that I even believe that. I have doubts about that, because I've always found and believed that it's true that we don't brag about things before we do them. So this account from verses 45 through 47, I'm not sure I even think, we don't even need to necessarily believe that that's true. We don't have to necessarily believe that that's true in order to understand the account, because that would not be humble on David's part for him to have said that. But I also don't think it would have helped him achieve what he was trying to achieve, because it would be revealing too much of what he was intending to do. Now, I'm not saying it's not possible. Far from it. I think we have to meditate on it and think about it to see whether we believe it or not. But if it doesn't work for, if bragging about something before we do it, every bully that I've ever seen, it's a bully who does that, who brags about something. But every bully who brags about what he's going to do before he does it generally fails, from what I've seen. People who brag about something before they do it never actually achieve it. That's been my experience, just unfailingly, I would say, in life, that it just doesn't work when you get ahead of yourself. Jeremiah received the word from Jehovah when King Zedekiah sent him to Pashur, son of Malchijah, and Zephaniah sent to him. Not sent him to. Zedekiah. Okay, this is Jeremiah 21. Jeremiah received the word from Jehovah when King Zedekiah sent to him Pashur, son of Malchijah, and Zephaniah, son of Maaseiah, the priest, requesting. So Zedekiah sent these two men to Jeremiah, requesting, please inquire of Jehovah in our behalf, because King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon is waging war against us. Perhaps Jehovah will perform one of his wonderful works in our behalf, so that he will withdraw from us. Can you imagine what it's like? The king of Babylon is attacking your city. This is a pretty big reason to be concerned, it would certainly appear. So this is the biggest thing that's happened in the book of Jeremiah so far, the announcement that Nebuchadnezzar is attacking the city. Jeremiah now said to them, verse 3, this is what you should say to Zedekiah. This is what Jehovah the God of Israel says. Here I am turning around against you the weapons of war that are in your own hands, with which you are fighting the king of Babylon and the Chaldeans, who are outside the wall besieging you, and I will gather them into the middle of the city, and I myself will fight against you with an outstretched hand and with a mighty arm, with anger and wrath and great indignation. I will strike the inhabitants of this city, both man and beast, by a great pestilence they will die. And after that, declares Jehovah, I will give King Zedekiah of Judah and his servants and the people of this city, those who survive the pestilence, the sword, and the famine, into the hand of King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon, into the hand of their enemies, and into the hand of those who are seeking to take their life. Into the hand of the enemies of the Israelites, not into the hand of the enemies of King Nebuchadnezzar. That might appear to be slightly ambiguous there. He will strike them down with the sword. He will not feel sorry for them, nor will he show compassion or have any mercy. And to this people, you should say, this is what Jehovah says. Here I am putting before you the way of life and the way of death. Those who remain in this city will die by the sword, by famine, and by pestilence. But whoever goes out and surrenders to the Chaldeans who are besieging you will keep living. And he will have his life as a spoil. In other words, he will be able to, you know, that will be his reward. The spoil is the reward of battle, right? For I have set my face against this city for calamity and not for good, declares Jehovah. It will be given into the hand, the city will, of the king of Babylon, and he will burn it with fire. To the household of the king of Judah, hear the word of Jehovah, O house of David. This is what Jehovah says. Uphold justice every morning and rescue the one being robbed from the hand of the defrauder. Well, this is the study Bible again. Okay. Just realized it. So we'll go back. Let's go to the reference version again. Which I'm meaning to read. As regards the household of the king of Judah, hear, O you men, the word of Jehovah. O house of David, this is what Jehovah has said. Every morning render sentence in justice and deliver the one being robbed out of the hand of the defrauder, that my rage may not go forth just like a fire and actually burn, and there be no one to extinguish it because of the badness of your dealings. Here I am against you, O inhabitants of the low plain, O rock of the level land, is the utterance of Jehovah. As for you who are saying, who will descend against us, and who will come into our dwellings? I will also hold an accounting against you according to the fruitage of your dealings, is the utterance of Jehovah. And I will set a fire ablaze in her forest, and it will certainly devour all the things round about her. This is the inhabitants of the low plain, verse 13, O rock of the level land. That's interesting, because Jerusalem is built on a mountain or on a hill. It's a curious description of the city of Jerusalem, to say the low plain. But it's talking about people perhaps who are living down lower as well. And the forests are mentioned there in verse 14. But the idea is that is going to be a very severe, well, accounting, verse 14. That's the idea, but it's a devastation that's and a very severe, Jehovah's rage is, you know, is talked about as a fire there, mentioned, described as a fire, but he has set his face against the city, verse 10, right? For calamity. It's a calamity that's coming upon Jerusalem, a calamity that's coming upon the city, right? A very, very severe defeat is coming, is the idea there. And they still have an opportunity that you can, they're told, you can go out, and if you leave the city, you will survive, in verse 9. They're advised to go out of the city, but, you know, that's not what happens, of course. At least not generally. Not everybody leaves the city. So here we go. We're finally getting to our final chapter for the day, Colossians. We don't have much time, so we are using up our time. Colossians chapter 3, the reference Bible version of it. If, however, Paul writing to the congregation at Colossae, if, however, you were raised up with the Christ, go on seeking the things above, where the Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Keep your minds fixed on the things above, not on the things upon the earth. For you died, and your life has been hidden with the Christ in union with God. When the Christ, our life, is made manifest, then you also will be made manifest with him in glory. Deaden, therefore, your body members that are upon the earth as respects fornication, uncleanness, sexual appetite, hurtful desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. on account of those things, the wrath of God is coming. In those very things, you too once walked when you used to live in them, but now really put them all away from you. Wrath, anger, badness, abusive speech, and obscene talk out of your mouth. Do not be lying to one another. Strip off the old personality with its practices and clothe yourselves with the new personality, which through accurate knowledge is being made new according to the image of the one who created it, where there is neither Greek nor Jew, circumcision nor uncircumcision, foreigner, Scythian, slave, free man, but Christ is all things and in all. Accordingly, remember Moses, he wrote that he was the meekest man on the surface of the whole earth. That's like me saying, I'm the most modest person in the world. That's what that's like saying. Accordingly, as God's chosen ones, holy and loved, clothe yourselves, that's hard to say, with the tender affections of compassion, kindness, lowliness of mind, mildness, and long-suffering. Continue putting up with one another and forgiving one another freely. But if anyone has a cause for complaint against another, even as Jehovah freely forgave you, so do you also. But besides all these things, clothe yourselves with love, for it is a perfect bond of union. Also, let the peace of the Christ control in your hearts, for you were, in fact, called to it in one body. And show yourselves thankful. Let the word of the Christ reside in you richly in all wisdom. Keep on teaching and admonishing one another with psalms, praises to God, spiritual songs with graciousness, singing in your hearts to Jehovah. And whatever it is that you do in word or in work, do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus, thanking God the Father through him. You wives, be in subjection to your husbands, as it is becoming in the Lord. You husbands, keep on loving your wives, and do not be bitterly angry with them. You children, be obedient to your parents in everything, for this is well-pleasing in the Lord. You fathers, do not be exasperating your children, so that they do not become downhearted. You slaves, be obedient in everything to those who are your masters in a fleshly sense, not with acts of eye service as men-pleasers, but with sincerity of heart, with fear of Jehovah. Whatever you are doing, work at it whole-souled as to Jehovah and not to men. For you know that it is from Jehovah you will receive the due reward of the inheritance. Slave for the master, Christ. Certainly the one that is doing wrong will receive back what he wrongly did, and there is no partiality. We're just at the end. There is a commentary from Clark. If you want to know about 1 Samuel 17 and the controversy, if you read the commentary on Bible Hub on 1 Samuel 17 by Clark, you'll find it there. It's November 17th, 2023, 1952 hours. I'm Ward Green, and I love you very much. And this is Crow on my behalf, and also Cassie on my behalf, saying bye for now.